You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Sons of Anarchy After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Sons of Anarchy After Show.
Nice, yeah. Bing. Bing is for doing. And we're here doing the Sons of Anarchy After Show, Season 5, Episode 6, Small World. But this is a very special episode because sitting with us are two actors from the show, Chris Reed and Mo McCray, but along with my old lady.
I was like, come on.
I'm sorry. I'm excited.
I mean, they're there for it, but the old lady always goes first.
No, you're right. The old lady's in. Well, No, the guys in the club, the maid guys, would go before the old lady.
You're right.
Okay, so let's see. Who are you?
I'm Chris Lee Kennedy.
There we go. Chris Lee
Sometimes
Kennedy.
Sometimes I forget.
There it is.
I can't help.
And so we're here with none other than Chris Reed, Mo McCray, a.k.a. Filthy Phil, and the new leader of the Niners. So very, very excited. Tyler, the character named Tyler we learned tonight. Yes. Very, very cool. So but we're just going to kind of pick your brains, so, and then we'll break down the episode, if that's okay with you guys.
Absolutely. And I'd like to thank you for being like the eighth person in a row to announce me as being special. I mean,
you are.
You are very special.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, so can I first say what I've been saying for weeks about what I love about your character? Now, Chris has been around biker gangs. One summer I was around a bunch of Hell's Angels for a summer working for them, like indirectly for one of their businesses. So I was able to observe a lot of what went on. And there were many, many Filthy Phils.
Yeah.
That were like, looked like the big teddy bear type, almost a little bit nerdy, but yet, and wanted to really prove themselves. Like they were outcasts, misfits, and they were really working hard as prospects and of course become made. So I just totally bought it. I bought into you from the beginning.
Yeah, it's really funny. When I first came on, you get a little bit of the fan feedback. And there was a small segment of folks that were like, this guy's not a biker. He doesn't belong. And to me, that was always a great indication of someone who wasn't informed at all in the life of the motorcycle club. I've done my own research and visited with guys. And it's amazing how many of these guys are, you know, just slightly geeky in some ways.
Yeah.
And just are, you know, you see a normal cross section that you would see in society. Just they happen to be in motorcycle clubs.
Right. And I think that feeling of not belonging.
Yeah,
they're not in the 99%.
Exactly. And they find something that they're going to hold on to and people that are going to accept them and let them do it, you know, be themselves.
And they become the best soldiers because they'll do anything.
Absolutely. Loyalty.
And it probably helps too because you're unassuming. Nobody expects you to.
Right.
Right. That's right.
And he's, you know, and you physically you're big, so it's like, you know, you can grow to someone who handles himself. And you know, you like, why wouldn't Bobby Elvis have been like Filthy Phil at one time? He's into Elvis. I mean, I totally see Bobby Elvis having started to be like Filthy Phil when he began his journey.
I agree completely. And you know, even if it's somebody who, you know, can't step up, you can always hide behind him, right?
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, I mean, with the size and the beard and just, you know, the intimidation. And by the way, like, you know, for me, Opie's journey from season one to the end, he was buff. He just had that scowl. But at the beginning, he felt like he felt like the midpoint between Filthy Phil and Bobby Elvis. That's where Opie started season one. But I think Opie probably was a little geeky.
You didn't really see Opie come into his own until his wife was killed either. Like, he really didn't have that much of a stance until Donna was killed.
Yeah, he was kind of doing the half-in, half-out thing. And, you know, he had the job working construction, and you saw him, you know, outside, and he didn't look as hard, and, you know, he was a little softer. And, you know, we saw him advance as the seasons went on. He became what Opie was, which is this gigantic, strong you know, crazy central character.
And so for you, your acting background, tell us about a little bit about you.
Well, I love this fun fact because I just learned this today.
What was that? And well,
I like this fun fact.
There's a lot of fun facts. You know, I wanted to act coming out of high school, so I went to a little junior college and did a 2-year program, and it was awesome.
Where was the junior college?
San Diego Mesa College.
And you know, this is great for fans to hear, and a lot of aspiring actors, you know, maybe who can't afford Juilliard or even Emerson or NYU. I love that. So that's not a school that would be known maybe for its dramatic arts.
No, not at all. And, you know, it's had some successful, you know, people pass through it who have done good and gone on to Yale and other schools. But I didn't really have that option. I didn't have a great GPA out of high school. I was kind of stupid. And applied to 2 different schools. And that was
But your focus there was acting.
Yeah, coming out, definitely.
So where did you study when you were there? Did you just do, like, the school play and things like that?
Yeah, or were there classes? I played football and had fun and did student body and all that stuff. But I think I did, like, 2 homework assignments my entire senior year, if that.
Okay.
Probably not even that. Maybe 1.
What were there classes on, you know, did you take classes while there?
Yeah. I had a great drama teacher in high school, and I was with him for all 4 years the entire time. And then out of college, I got lucky and found another great teacher. And
here in L.A.?
No, San Diego.
That's just great for people who think
he's new to LA.
But it's great for people to hear this because, you know, I can't tell you how many times people think that they have to be either in New York or LA to be with the best people. So this is amazing that, you know, from a community outside of those places, you were able to get the education you needed.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really what you put into it. I mean, it's all about work. And I was lucky. I grew up in a situation where you had to work hard. I grew up on sport fishing boats and ram boats out of college when I didn't do anything else and acting wasn't quite working out yet. And that's what I did for a while until I got a job at the La Jolla Playhouse, which is a really prestigious regional theater in San Diego. Jersey Boys started there. They've had dozens of shows go to Broadway. Memphis, which just won the Tony a couple years ago for best show. And that's where I did my first show and got my equity card, got an agent through it, and started auditioning.
And his first television role is...
Filthy Phil and Sons of Anarchy.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah,
really amazing. And do you think when Kurt cast you, did he have a long term plan for Filthy Phil or did it evolve?
You know, I wasn't really privy to that. You know, basically my perspective on it is they brought in 3 prospects when I came in.
Right.
You know, Hassack had left at the end of season 2. And in episode 4 they introduced me and Miles. And then in episode 6 of that season, they brought in me, Miles, and Shepard to get our cuts and like a little introduction to the club.
Remember that.
And Shepard was gone rather quickly. He, I don't know what the plan. A great actor played him. Leo Fitzpatrick or Leo Fitzgerald, who was on Kids and is a really darn good guy. And I kind of thought he was going to be the one who stuck around, but it didn't work that way. And me and Miles survived the season, and then. Miles got patched and later killed in season 4, spoiler alert. And I don't know if the whole central plan was to keep
Marissa, you got
to
play spoiler for them.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Yeah, so.
Anyway, but for me as a filmmaker,
you're
the guy I would have kept. Because you're just your look and your presence is something that I remembered.
Oh,
that stuck with me. And again, it's what I saw back there.
Yeah.
Back East is what I saw from what I would think is one of the premier outfit clubs.
Yeah, Angels, in New York?
In Boston.
Boston, gotcha.
So, you know what I mean? So seeing that,
Mo has the complete opposite background.
So, yeah, so going over...
I did my homework today. I'm pretty impressed.
Now, let me also now compliment you, Mo, because tonight was really the first night that we... Well, it's the second night that we saw you, but we got to know more about you.
Yeah.
But... All I remembered as you came in tonight and we talked briefly, I said, I just remember your reaction to when the other bikers were, when Pope had the other bikers killed from the Niners, and your reaction of just like complete shock. And your acting tonight, the restraint that you used and just your expressions, it showed that you were present in the meeting, but yet you could tell you were over your head. That this was like, what am I doing here? I was just a soldier a few weeks ago, not even a second or third in charge, and now I'm in charge. But I'm going to do my best to hold my own. And all that to me was conveyed with your body language to me. And that's great acting. It's a show, don't tell, you know, and I do agree, Chris.
No, absolutely. It's something that's similar between both of their characters is with both of them, especially, you know, tonight we saw a lot more with Mo that to be able to show the world exactly what you're feeling without saying a word is amazing. And it's, and your background is totally opposite of his background.
How so? How is it?
I mean, I got my cheat sheet, I got my homeworks, but you've been acting for a long time.
Well, he was born a woman.
That
has to come out later in the interview.
Oh, yeah.
Later, spoiler alert.
Come on, Marissa.
Spoiler alert.
But you started acting a lot younger.
Yes, I did.
Went from basketball to theater. I got it. I read the interview.
Come on, tell me my life story.
The interview came out today. It was a great interview on starpulse.com. It was amazing. Okay. I got to read through it and learn a lot about you. And then finding out that he actually rides a motorcycle, I'm always excited to hear that. But you've been acting for a long time, and you've done a lot of work other than Sons.
Yeah, I think I've had a pretty good career so far. I've been blessed. I started in high school. We share that. That's the same. Started in high school.
What high school?
Washington Preparatory.
Okay.
In Los Angeles. I'm actually from LA.
LA.
Not a lot of people in the industry are from LA.
No,
they're not. You know, it's funny. We met with a few years ago. We had a meeting with Nike, and one of their gripes was that celebrities come here, kind of get their success out of LA, and then go back to their hometowns around the country as heroes and like, oh, I'll build a football field in my hometown. And no one gives back to L.A. because they just kind of rape the city and leave. So it's very cool that you
now
got
those Nike small can get with me. Like USC.
Just now they got you.
Barely getting by.
Barely getting by with SC and the Lakers. No, but now me and Nike could come together and they could do a football stadium with
me. We can talk that. We can talk about that.
But
we
a hometown hero.
We got to keep the career going. No, I wanted to. Anyway, it's good that you know, Chris, about his career. But for
but
our
you're
fans.
You're not only an actor.
I want to know everything. No. So you get out of school, and then what's your next step?
I started bagging groceries.
Did you really?
Yes, that was my. I have had one job in my life. I worked at Ralph's, and I bagged groceries.
Union job, good money.
On 3rd and La Brea, and all the time people would come in and say, "Oh my God, you're such a handsome guy. You should be an actor." I'd be like, "That's what I want to do." And they say, "I'm a manager. Take my card." And I'd be pumped. I'd go home and tell my grandmother about it. Then I call. I'd get the assistant. Call, get the assistant, over and over, and then finally I quit.
You know, it's funny. I applied at a grocery store and got accepted, but I didn't want to join the union and pay the dues. It's just funny.
Hilarious. Now I pay a lot more. You SAG? Now you have to pay your dues.
No, you have to
pay. It's a different story.
SAG
doesn't play. So go ahead, please.
Sorry.
How did you eventually turn into acting from bagging groceries?
It was a really Hollywood dream story the way it happened. I was involved with this program and this organization where we did a lot of community work teaching kids in at-risk environments the importance of spoken word, poetry, or music, and the arts to express themselves. And we got a lot of press, so an agent came to check out the program. But I was sitting outside in the lobby. He didn't know I was a part of the program or anything. And he sees me in a chair and he hits me with the same thing I kept hearing at Ralph's, which was, "Oh, you've got a great look. You should be an actor. You're interested in acting." I'm like, "That's what I love. It's what I want to do. I'm trying to find a way in." He's like, "I'm an agent. I'd represent you." And by this time, I'm tired of hearing it.
Can I ask you what agency he was with?
Michael Green at Green & Associates.
Oh.
So I say, I've heard this a lot. I'm just going to find my own way. He said, "No, I don't just talk. I'm serious." I said, "I'm serious too."
Okay.
And he said, "Well, if you have any talent and you're serious, I'll start. We'll talk next week." So I called, and I've been with him my entire career. It's been
That's
10
amazing.
Plus years.
Wow. Okay. So then you started booking stuff.
Yes.
What were some of the other things you've done?
Early, I was in a film. The first movie I was in was 13.
Okay.
Then I did a lot of television shows like NYPD Blue and Boston Public, a couple episodes of that, and Cold Case, and so on and so on, and films. And
it's amazing because usually, again, I'm the old guy at the table, but this is the journey of all the great actors who eventually, you know, get there. Like right now, it's a recurring role for you, but this is you're right on that program to be able to build to a series regular, you know, which is cool. I'm excited to be sitting next to you.
No, man, thank you. It's humbling. Cool. I'm just thankful to get paid to have fun. You know, I feel it's unfair sometimes.
Can you talk to Maria Menounos about that sometimes? You know, she made it very young, and we have this argument all the time where I'm like, you understand, like, don't, when she'll say, I have to go to work. I'm like, no, you're going down to the Grove where music's playing and the sun's shining and you and Mario Lopez are dancing with 100 people behind you. That's what you're doing. You're not working. Work. I can show you what work is if you want. We can be reminded of how much fun work is. That's really cool. So you ride a motorcycle. Do you ride a motorcycle, Chris?
I do ride, although I don't own a motorcycle.
But you do ride.
Yeah.
Okay. So how much riding is done on the show by the actors?
Quite a bit. Almost all of it. Matter of fact, they only use stuntmen if something like crazy happens. Like if somebody goes down or if, there's some sort of action involving weaving in and out of cars that has to be done really quickly. I mean, last year, Happy like kicked a cop car, and that was, you know, David LaBrava doing his own writing.
Right.
He's just a very accomplished writer. So I would say 90% of it is done by the actors.
It's impressive.
And it seems like that in the wide shots, and I'm keep trying to figure out. So no one's on a trailer.
No.
Like on the TV show,
you know,
Chips.
No. I won't be spoiling anything by saying Ron Perlman is pretty much the only guy who gets trailered up at this point. I did my first season 3, that was me on a trailer, and it was terrifying. It was way worse than riding an actual motorcycle.
Think it'd be
the trailer?
Yeah. Oh, it's
why?
It's awful. Because they like duct tape your motorcycle onto this plywood, and then it drags you behind it, and it's like falling down because it doesn't have any momentum of its own.
Oh, it's not the same process trailer for cars. See, the car trailer is fine.
Right. No, that's cake.
No, this was way, and it didn't look like they were, it was terrifying.
You know, it's intentional. Yeah. So you'll really ride the bike.
Absolutely.
So they're like, break out the 2x4.
That's exactly what it was. And after that, I'm like, you know what? I am never getting on that damn trailer.
But Ron Perlman can't ride. Right? He can't, no? Mm. Oh, really?
I mean, yeah, he can.
Okay, no, he can ride. All right, we don't want to go there. So, anyway.
He can dance is what he can do. Man can dance.
We were talking about Kurt Sutter and how he started out with 20,000 Twitter followers and what he's grown into. And you had some thoughts on why it's grown so much.
Well, we are actually discussing the wonderful work you guys have done in making your following so big. Yeah, AfterBuzz has become so huge. And Kurt, you know, when I first got on the show, he had like 20-something thousand followers and was just he got publicity when he said an angry thing about the Emmy snubs or something like that. And then season 4, it seems like, in the hiatus, he made a real concentrated effort to stay engaged with the fan base and build almost a relationship with them. And I think it's really, really paid off for our show. I mean, you see our ratings have climbed past 2 seasons,
right,
which is basically unheard of.
Unheard of, yeah.
And now he's up to something like 185,000 followers.
And he's so brutally honest on Twitter.
Yes.
Like, you don't ever have to question where he stands on an issue, no matter if it's with the show or anything else. And I think, as someone who does follow him on Twitter and who's someone who's obsessed with Twitter, I think that's important. And it is also important to respond to whatever followers that you have. And he's really gracious at doing that. And he's also great at giving out information, where he's great at giving you the information that you really want, but just enough to make sure that you engage in the show and that you watch it without giving you all the spoilers. Like, he's really kind of, and I'm very surprised to hear that he's actually tweeting everything himself, because I had gotten to the point where the last year I was like, no way he's tweeting all this stuff himself. Like, he's got to have a publicist doing it for him.
Why do you say no way?
Well,
is it just so clever?
He's very clever and he's very witty and he's very brutally honest. And at the same time, somebody who's as busy as him, I just wondered if he was the one that was actually sending the tweets. Because we all know there's people that don't send their own tweets.
We do. By the way, Maria, all of hers, she sends out herself.
That.
And I also know a lot of other celebrities that do. They're very intimate with their fans.
Yeah, you have to be.
It means a lot to them. And I think a lot of celebrities get so unfortunate because they can't really have real friends, because, you know, you never know who's being your friend, what's real, what isn't. It goes back to Sunset Boulevard. If you guys ever see this movie, it's a great movie. But it says so much about Hollywood back then and now. But Nora Desmond, I think she has one line where she says, at the end of the day, it's just us and those little people in the theater. Or there's some line.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that you have this relationship with your fans and kind of nothing else.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. That's how we got Chris here tonight. Yeah, exactly.
That's how we got Chris here tonight. I was tweeting.
Tell us about, so you guys, I want to hear both you guys what it's like. I know it hasn't been a long time you work with Kurt, but can you tell us, you know, starting with you, Chris, about what it's like to work with Kurt, maybe some interesting fun stories?
Well, you know, it's really pertinent now because Kurt always directs the final episode of the season, and that's what we're working on right now. And it's really great to have him in that process because he has everything so figured out, and he knows exactly what he wants to see, that it really makes him a great director on set. He gives you little pieces of action, even when you're just, you know, standing in the background, that informs what's happening on screen. And that's something that I think he uses in his entire process. I mean, the writing, you can tell that he's just thinking about everything and he's got it all covered. So it comes out really rich on screen. And, you know, besides when he's directing, I don't really have much direct contact with him. He's at that point, he's very much the writer and the producer, and we see him for the table reads, and that's about it because he's just so darn busy.
At the table reads, is he directing you guys in any way, shape, or form, or does he leave that to his field generals, like the people directing the episode?
No, he just wants to hear it. He gives a lot of room for his actors, and that's what the table reads for, is he gets to listen to what their take is on it. And that informs his first edit and so on and so forth.
But he's not saying, you know, can you say it more this way or
he has never given a direction at a table read.
Wow.
Not one.
You know what my question is? Do you guys – I know that in some series when you get your parts, you get your scripts, you're not given the entire script for the whole episode. You're only given the couple pages that you're in. Is that so for you guys as well?
No, we get the whole script.
Okay. So you really got a feel for the entire episode and know what's going on to know where you stand rather than all a big secret.
I think that's important. Yeah, it's smart for them to do it that way, to at least understand what's going on in that particular episode so you could get a feel for what your color is in the whole grand scheme of the painting.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I agree.
I don't know which one of you said this because I remember reading it today, but you were saying just that what you think your words are being spoken sometimes has nothing to do with the story that it's telling.
Oh, yeah, that was my
That was you.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was really interesting to me because as a viewer, we would never know that or see that. And when you get a script, sometimes it's hard to really feel out where it is. And then when you watch back, that was kind of cool to hear you say.
And I think tonight's episode is a prime example of that, where everybody's having these conversations, but it's really not about the daycare and the kids playing and having to kiss them before you go to sleep. There's all the subtext in every scene. So I think that for me being a part of the show, and Chris, I know you know the same thing, the way Kurt Sutter sets everything up, the whole world is orchestrated to where you have to find truth in so many lies, which makes it interesting. So where people have to decipher, like, is this really happening or what are they talking about? And if you know, then you get to be in on the secret, which makes it part of the fun of being a fan of the show.
And you know what's interesting, Mo, is that Tyler is at the head of his organization.
Yes.
And he's not necessarily embracing it. He's trying to figure out his way. And we kind of see Jax, who's also newly at the head
of
his organization.
Very similar.
And you can just see the different directions that they're taking. Whereas Jax is watch his best friend die. You watched Darnell die brutally in the first scene.
Right.
Who was a friend of mine. I played him as a dear friend.
You guys have come up together. And it's a very parallel situation you guys have. But the one scene with you saw just how differently those choices have led you. I mean, unless they took out a scene where you beat somebody to death with a snow globe.
I haven't gotten my retribution yet, so I'm still waiting.
Oh, it's going to be cold and brutal.
Yeah, well, you know, and he's more green, you know, than the character, than Jax, because Jax grew up in the system. And,
yeah, and had a father as president.
Right. And it was interesting. You're right, though, because it's watching Alvarez, who's like the vet.
He's a definite vet.
And you've got Jax, who's kind of in the middle. And then you have, you know, Tyler, who's like, you know, the rookie. So it was interesting. It was a great, like, summit. Lynn's always there. He's great, too.
Yeah, it's nice to see him around.
I mean, it's like, you know, even to do the show, you guys, it's hard because there's so much going on.
There's so many layers.
And there's so many characters in this. You know, that's really hard to do as a writer in an hour. And they've got me on everything.
It's hard as an actor, too, because you go into chapel and then you're like, okay, wait. Okay, what happened 3 pages ago in the last scene? Do I know this? Does the character know this? Yeah, the character knows this, but he doesn't know this. So you've got to make sure you play that as, you know, as honestly as you can without, you know,
tipping the hand.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, or indicating a little too much, and
trying not to indicate.
Oh my!
I don't want to look at you because
I'm so
happy.
I don't have to work anymore tomorrow. I'd be terrible. but yes, it's something that the layers just get really complicated after a while, and you have to be on top of your game as an actor, and then as a fan, it's even way more harder because you don't get to read it three times.
No.
Was the Opie death scene and maybe even the Opie funeral, was it emotional for you guys? And before you answer, you know, this is what I want to say, is we were watching it. We were very emotional watching it. And I said to myself, I had a funny feeling that it felt like it would have been emotional for the actors too, because he seems like a good guy. I don't know. I've always felt like I've had a knack for watching actors say, okay, I can tell that guy's really a dick. And then I can tell this guy's really a nice guy.
It shows up in the work. It shows up.
It does. It does. You know something? It does. And I feel it does. And or if I see someone that maybe is not even a dick, but just so consumed by the role.
Yeah.
I say this about Jack Lord doing Hawaii Five-0. You know, again, I'm dating myself. I say this about Adam West doing Batman. I say Shatner doing Star Trek. But, like, these guys were just, as much as they got, some of them got mocked for the way they portrayed the roles, I feel like they just were the role.
Yeah.
And at some point, they never knew how to step out of it. They were that much into the role, which I think is kind of cool. But with, but Opie, to me, seems like a nice guy.
Good guy.
Mm-hmm. He seems like a good guy. And I would think that to not be working with him anymore would be emotional for a lot of those actors who spent four or five seasons. And, you know, when you do these kind of shows, and I know from having done writing on TV shows, it's so sad when shows go off the air or you break everybody up, not only because you're saying goodbye to someone at a job. It's not just any job. It's not like you working at Ralph's. You worked with them for 5 years, and still you'd be bummed when they leave. But these jobs that are so significant, and there's just major pivotal parts of your life, life-changing jobs. This is life-changing, this job for you. And, yes. And Mo, this is a life-changing job for you. So think of, for Opie, you know, life-changing for him and life-changing for the other people around him, other than, say, a Ron Perlman. But even to a degree, it's given Ron and Gemma such extended plays in their careers that maybe they didn't expect. So with all that said, was it really emotional just to do the scenes?
Immensely. Because Ryan came back for episode 4 when he laid in the coffin.
Wow.
And it was really a real goodbye at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, because Ryan is a really soulful dude, and he might say things along the lines about the process that he went through with Opie. Mm-hmm. But he did say one thing that I think can be revealed, and that's that every actor has like a graveyard of characters that they did, and then they put them away, and they're just always kind of there. And I have them, even though not on TV. I have them from my stage work and everything I've done my whole career, as I'm sure Mr. McRae has quite a few of them littered about. But Ryan was talking about that, and it's really true. I mean, you say goodbye to someone, and they go away. And there's a sadness to that that you can't avoid, and those 2 weeks were pretty tough.
But you guys are really a family outside of the show as well. I'm constantly seeing and following on Twitter and on Facebook that you're doing charity events together. Mm-hmm. And outside of work, you guys are all pretty tight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it shows on the show, too.
Absolutely.
And let me jump in right there, since you said charity event. We have to acknowledge this wonderful thing that Chris Reed just did.
The Golf Classic.
The Golf Classic.
It was amazing.
We were trying to go, actually.
We were. Oh, really? We were trying to go. I was like, how do we find out about this?
Oh, you guys should have
Chris Reed put together such an amazing event for an amazing cause.
I could have whored out, sent you Maria.
Yeah. Next year, consider that booked.
Absolutely.
We'll all be there next year. Don't worry.
That would be fantastic.
As long as you take along my old lady.
The old lady has to go.
I'm going to just interject a quick shout out to thebootcampaign.org. And they're really the ones who got that done and organized it. And they're the best people. What the cause for the boot campaign is it's just it started as an awareness thing. Had people buy combat boots and put them on for soldiers returning home that people are wearing boots, and it's just a small thing of support. And it's grown, and now they give away mortgage-free homes. Their whole mission is to improving soldiers' lives when they come back home.
So important.
Yeah, and they work with the Lone Survivor Foundation with Marcus Luttrell, who's got a movie coming out. And it's such a beautiful, wonderful organization filled with the most inspiring people you can imagine. A lot of the volunteers are military wives and spouses.
So Marcus, his movie is coming out, right? It was just, is it Mark Wahlberg is the one?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's Emmett Furler is doing it.
Yes. And
Pain and Gain? I believe
that the name? I'm sorry that I don't know because you just caught me off guard with this, but I just heard great things about this movie. Randall Emmett's a producer that I work
Wahlberg
with.
Wahlberg really threw himself into it.
Yes.
I did. I had heard that, but I haven't learned much about it. We haven't seen Marcus.
It's supposed to be a great story. They just had a dinner with all of them, and the survivors, the families of the survivors met with the actors playing the roles, and I guess were so touched and how well they did. But so that's really interesting. So he's part of this.
Yeah, it's just Marcus has been involved with Boot Campaign, and it's impossible not to hang around that organization and not be really touched.
And you got involved and then pulled all the sons in, or
you know, I came from San Diego, which is a military town, and I count myself really fortunate in that because I grew up with F-14s flying over my elementary school, and I got a real sense of service in the town because you had friends whose dads were going away and moms were going away and constantly moving and leaving, and I got a real sense of what it means to be in the service, and I really, really appreciate it, and I count myself really fortunate for this job for many, many reasons, and none of them is more prominent than I get to do a little bit in helping service members and just anything towards it.
There's always been kind of it seems like a kinship between people in the service and bikers. And if you like, the Hells Angels was started by, you know, in 48 by old military men who basically.
Fighters, which was the first club in California, was military.
Military because they kind of came back. They still wanted to kick ass and they kind of had no purpose. They felt like they had no purpose, nothing to do. And they were, you know, and probably were messed up from the war. And back then we weren't aware of post traumatic stress disorder and all those other things. And they banded together. And off it went. And so it's also interesting on the show that Jax's dad was, I think, was Vietnam.
Yes, you know? Clay, Piney, and John Teller were all Vietnam vets.
So it's perfect. So it's very organic that
how Sutter thinks everything out. He has a whole mythology behind it that richly informs what you see where the club is today. And that's with Clay, with Gemma, with the dearly departed Piney and John Teller. And it influences who Jax is becoming, and that's the story of the show.
Wow.
And it just shows that the military connection will always be there with Sons. And it's something that I'm really proud to be a part of.
That's very cool.
We're happy to have you on Sons.
Yeah.
And I just want to let the listeners know as well that Chris does have another engagement that he has to get to. So if you stop hearing from him
if he just fades away.
It's not because he doesn't love you all. It's just because he does have somewhere else that he has to get to.
I can do my Chris Reed impression.
I'll be happy. You can do it.
You know what? Hey, Marissa, do we have commercials anymore that we can go to?
Yeah, we can go to commercial.
Let's go to commercial, and then when we come back, we will
break down the episode.
Mo, can you stay with us, please?
Yes, I can.
All right, we are going to actually break down this episode, and Chris, maybe you'll come back another week.
Whenever you
Absolutely.
Want.
We'd love to have you back.
I would love to, yeah.
And sit in and really, you know, do an episode with us. All right, let's go to commercial, Marissa, and then we will be back to break down this episode.
Hey there, good buddies. The handle's Woolly Bear. I'm a truck driving man, but I'm not that old school kind of truck driving man, no. I like to listen to podcasts while I'm driving through these great United States of ours. And my favorite podcasts in the world are from AfterBuzz TV. And why? Because AfterBuzz TV is like a post-game wrap-up show for all your favorite TV shows, like Jersey Shore, Dancing with the Stars, Mad Men, and a whole truckload more. I like listening to my Gossip Girl podcast, catching up with all my fellow fans and getting all the latest news and gossip. No, I got some strong opinions. And AfterBuzz TV lets me share those opinions with thousands of other listeners. Holy, what a feeling. I used to doze off on those lonely stretches of road. And don't worry, I got the cruise control. But now I'm wide awake and listening to all the AfterBuzz TV goodness. Check them out. Give them a holler. And tell them the old Woolly Bear sent you.
AfterBuzz TV.
Hi, I was once like you. A lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And, like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzz TV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds, like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzz TV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series, with over 60 different after-shows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV aftershows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. What do you want to buzz about?
Like, Mo McCray's busy. Leave a message.
And we're back. And Mo McCray's busy, so leave a message. Hey guys, we're back. Kevin is stepped out for a minute. He's saying goodbye to Chris, which we're super glad that you guys came in tonight. But we want to get into the episode because I know our listeners want to get the little breakdown before we head out for the night. So the first thing that we are going to talk about is the Gemma Nero Carla situation.
Wow. Okay.
Which, first of all, I mean, we know we've seen Carla be set up as scary. Mm-hmm. She's tough. She's not taking any bullshit from anybody. But I don't know. I don't think that I ever expected Carla to cross the line that she crossed tonight.
Yes.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, guys.
Kevin's back.
Welcome back, buddy.
How'd you do without me?
We did good. You know, Mo McCray was busy.
Right,
we left
thing,
her a
Mo,
message.
Here's the thing. I'm not a host.
Okay,
I'm gonna tell you right now. I'm not a host, but
you're hosting.
Chrisley is a host. She's a professional host, and she throws it on me.
I'm just the old lady
to do this.
I do. I totally
yeah.
Throw
she
it
throws
on
it on me because she
Every
wants to
week.
Be the old lady on this.
I just want to be.
How
the
did
old
you
lady.
Do when I was gone?
Well, Mo actually brought us back. It was brilliant.
All right, thank you, Mo.
Talking about our great commercial voices.
Oh, Rich. Sir Richard Wentworth. So we need to reach out to good old Sir Richard and have
For
him
Mo.
Do your yeah, do your
that
your,
would be
your
great.
Voicemail. Yeah,
yeah.
He's fantastic.
I really appreciate that.
He's a very talented young man.
We were talking about Gemma, Nero, and Carla and that disastrous threesome tonight and
wow.
how Carla's really been set up to be. We've known she's tough. We know she's hard. We know she doesn't take bullshit, but
she's a Latino Gemma.
But as I watched tonight, I did not expect it to go where it went. By any, like, there was nothing
either.
In my head.
I didn't.
I'm usually good at pinning
this. So
it
was great writing. Great
it
writing.
Was brilliant writing.
I didn't expect it.
Surprise factor.
But I found it to be organic. I didn't.
Of course it was.
It wasn't like, to me, it wasn't like, wait, that's out of character. It was.
It's like, okay, I expect her to break in. I expect her to pull a gun. Do I expect her to say, Nero, Gemma, get naked in bed and start having oral
sex? No, but
sex?
that seems like Kurt Sutter. Like, if you read his tweets and stuff, he's crazy.
The perversion.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you follow him on Twitter, you know what kind of guy he is.
He's a pretty raw guy.
He's really raw, but I appreciate that in him. I feel like not having a censor is what makes me fall in love with Kurt Sutter every time he tweets.
Well, and to me, I looked at Carla as a Gemma type. She's an old lady, loyal, smart, all those things. But Jem is so damn good that Carla just came up a little short. And she knew she lost.
She did.
She knew she lost and she was going to blow her head off because she was a true old lady. Her
yeah.
life was all about Nero.
And it was interesting that they let us in on the fact that they weren't lovers. Where in Carla's mind, they may have been lovers, and she may have been
she
in love with
they
Nero.
Could have been.
Right, but it was in like that was really.
But Gemma was right. Gemma said, "Yeah, she was in love with you."
But
because of course Gemma
he
knows
looked
all.
At her like a little sister. Like he brought her in, he took care of her, then she saved him. But I think as viewers, we all thought that they had something.
I felt
past.
Like it felt like to me that. They messed around maybe like 10 years ago. Like I see that a lot with relationships. And then the guy, whatever, starts hitting on younger girls or whatever.
Right.
But the old lady stays loyal.
Right.
But man, it was something, you know, it definitely took me by surprise. But again, I bought it.
It's always buyable.
I bought it.
Yeah.
So in comes, of course, Clay.
Well, she called Unser
right?
first.
She calls. You're right. She
and
called
he,
Unser
of course,
first.
Doesn't answer because he's had it.
Right.
Old Faithful is done.
He is, and I love Unser.
And
just
by the
give
way,
him a hug.
No. So, but by the way, it's it. Listen, that's we can't really just gloss over that because what Unser said to her.
Right.
Was amazing. You, basically, you're going to die alone.
Yeah.
You know,
you have no one.
Everyone knows. You just, you know, I know what your game is now. You kind of just give me a kiss or whatever to get me to do what you want. But at the end of the day, it's all about you.
Right.
And Jax knows it and Tara knows it. And you're going to die alone. And by the way, this, to me, I don't know many more painful things to say to somebody, especially a woman.
He should have incorporated the fact that she would have 9 cats. That would have just really did it. You're going to die alone with some cats.
Birds, with cats. Because she loves her birds.
Right.
The birds.
Yeah, she's got
creepy
the birds.
Bird
same deal, birds or cats. But I thought that was amazing because for all these seasons, you know, Hunter, you know, he has always been
her right-hand man.
Yeah.
He shows up when no one else does.
But she's amazing because she said, what's up with you? Like, she's so shrewd.
But
like,
she crossed the line with him. Had she not kissed him and not given in to that moment.
She needed to at the moment, though, to get him to do her bidding.
But if she hadn't, he'd still be there for her. Because he would still be waiting.
She let him bite the carrot, basically.
Yeah, she gave him too much.
But we don't know if she didn't give him that at the moment.
Would he have, yeah.
He may have had it back then. Like, she had to keep doling out. You know,
baiting.
Little by little.
But
it's interesting. The character of Gemma, she's so shrewd. But she said, what's up with you? She knows he's talking to.
Of course.
May not know specifically that he's talking to the sheriff or whatever, but he knows that.
He's hanging around the hospital.
He's having a moment of consciousness where he's starting to say, you know what?
Maybe he's getting away from her grip. He's coming out of the web.
Yeah. And she is such a black widow, too. She's just evil.
Widow. Such a black widow.
And I was actually shocked that she ended up calling Clay. Like,
no, not at all. Who's she going to call? Not at all.
She's called Bobby in the past. She's called Tig in the past.
They're not with her anymore. Everything's been. And by the way, we saw her and Clay, things melting. Remember last week we saw in the healing a little melting?
Yeah, not so much healing this week.
This was not healing this week. But I totally see her buying. Calling Clay.
Right.
I could see. I mean, Mo, what do you think?
Yeah, she needs him. And he wants her so bad that she knows she could always kind of dangle that in front of him because he desires to be in her good graces.
Right.
Right.
So he'll do the things that no one else would do, and for the exact reason what she showed at the end, which was, can I come by tonight?
Right. And of course
everybody
she
has
said
motives.
Yes. Of course.
Why did she say yes?
Well, she knew she wasn't going
to
be there. Right.
Wait,
exactly.
Wait, that's Mo.
She had to.
She had to. You can't have him come and clean up the literal and proverbial dirty work and then say, okay, now that's it.
Now beat it.
Because he didn't finish the job.
Exactly.
She needs to wait till those ashes are cremated,
done, right?
Then she can go back
to
saying no. Yeah, she can't say no yet.
No, she's not stupid.
And, let's talk about Clay and Nero just briefly. You know, their little tete-a-tete. I'm surprised Nero didn't say, hey, there's nothing between us, because he made the agreement with Jax, but he said, I don't know.
No, Clay said man to man. He couldn't lie. He asked for man to man.
I agree. He couldn't. He's not sure. He doesn't know where he stands with her. We saw them having that moment where you could see the passion and the fire between them, but they weren't supposed to do it because of what Jack said. And now, I mean, I don't think he really knows where he stands with Gemma. And from last week when I talked about the interview, we know that they're going to be each other's distractions throughout the season. So we know there's something that's going to continue between them, whether it's physical or not, we don't know. And I feel like he was being honest with Clay, which I don't know why anybody would, but he clearly doesn't know who Clay is.
He has a code of honor.
Okay, so real quick.
Can we talk about Clay?
Do we want to jump down to Clay? No, we'll get to Clay. Don't worry. So let's talk about Tara. We see Tara goes in and tries to make a deal with Otto, played wonderfully by Kurt.
She's a fine actress. She's a wonderful actress.
And she's
interject there.
She's developed so much into her character from seasons in the past to now. It's this season when she really took the role of the president's wife. You saw it physically in her. She stood differently.
Yeah, manifested.
And it was kind of amazing to see that as somebody who's watched from season one, where she was just like this doctor who didn't know her place. And she kind of was like, I was like, why is he with the geek? Like, I don't understand. He's a biker. But now she's really.
She's had a great arc. She's probably had the greatest arc in terms of trajectory out of every character on the show.
And rather organic. And by the way, I always bought him liking her because that's if you're a badass, that's exactly what you want. You want the one that's
totally moral, a doctor, even better.
Square. You want to get a square. You absolutely. Bring a square to the circle.
That's what we want. I mean, that's what he would want.
absolutely.
But it's interesting. So she gets into Otto. Otto's mm-hmm. not budging.
No, I mean, he would have budged if she budged down on her knees.
But he said, and I won't either.
Right.
You know, which I thought was great writing and a great line.
Great power play, too. It was like, you want me to do this, you do this. No, then I can't do it.
Well,
you want me to compromise my integrity, you compromise yours.
And everything that Otto has gone through and done for the club behind bars for all these years.
Yeah, he's well within
done.
His rights.
Like, he's well just, within his rights. He's had it. And the problem is that They may never get the truth to him.
So
he may never believe the truth.
And we have to go rapid fire. I'm sorry, you guys.
I know we
took up so Tara and Gemma make a seem
amends.
Like, again, things are melting. Can you come by and watch the kids and all that? So it's like things are moving along.
And Tara needs them. Her a little bit.
You absolutely,
know? So
right?
She's going to, it's like keep your enemies close and your, or whatever.
Right.
It is.
Yeah, that thing.
That one that I keep screwing up.
Keep your Gemma close.
Yeah, exactly. Keep Gemma close. It's
and
what
keep,
she's doing. She's
and
not
keep
being
Gemma
stupid.
Even closer.
Right.
Because, yeah, okay, so that's what's going on with them. But what was interesting is Tara and Jax both kind of lie to each other.
Big time lie.
Okay, so it's like, oh, I had nothing today. It was kind of uneventful. And then she's like, yep, I didn't get to Otto, but I will.
But would you guys say it was for the same reason, to protect the heart
yes.
of the other? To keep
100%.
The worry factor down?
Tara is very much forming her role as the president's wife, and she's not going to just go to Otto once. She's going to go to him and continue to try.
Is she
going to
wear him down, or is she going to kill him? Like, what is her plan?
I think she'll try to wear him down a little bit first.
You don't think she's going to do the deed?
I think that she will eventually,
you
but
think
I think
she
she'll
will?
Try to wear him down first.
And
I
by
think
the way,
that that's why she didn't tell him tonight, because she wants to have the couple chances to go to him and say, I tried, and then I had to.
Does killing him benefit them? I mean, do we have his testimony under wraps?
Yeah, it's in there. That's the whole reason why she's there, is to make him reverse his testimony.
Right.
It's there.
So killing,
yeah, so
him,
killing doesn't help.
Killing's not going to help.
It seals it.
So she's going to wear him down. And it's interesting. She's like, Gemma, can you step in on the kids? Gemma's out boozing. She's back to being party girl. And of all things, Joel McHale comes in to hit on her.
It was so weird. It was
so weird.
He was good. Joel
was
really
good.
He's a talent.
Dropped in and honest.
I would have never expected to see Joel McHale in a role like that either.
No,
he had the stubbly beard. Did you see the stubble?
He was good. Like, he was
really good.
Completely unassuming. I was just like, did that really just happen?
But here's one problem. And I'm going to share this with you, Mo, because you're a young actor.
Okay.
The problem is when you're Joel, and this is why Joel is so talented that he's able to balance this, but it's hard for even him. It's also hard for Mario Lopez, and anyone who's, quote, a personality but also an actor. When we get to see them as Joel McHale every day, it's hard to buy him as,
mm-hmm.
you know, random guy in the bar. Hitting
the disbelief, the suspension of disbelief.
Right, that's it. So when so as soon as they come in to a scene, I know this as a director, when we call it stunt casting,
yes.
but when you stunt cast, say, a Snooki, or let's say you want to, throw them in your movie because they're gonna give you a little bit of juice.
They're gonna bring their Twitter
fan base,
yeah, all that stuff, and it's a business. But the hard thing is your mind immediately goes to, that's Joel McHale,
right?
So while we're all shouting at the screen, that's Joel McHale, we're losing
moments,
right? Yes. So it's a little bit difficult. He's a good enough actor where he pulls it off, but it is difficult. That's why we got to keep you a little hidden.
That's it.
No,
for this
that's
interview.
Why no reality. No reality
well,
show
back,
for you.
Because Joel was slated for 2 episodes, so we will see more of him.
Yeah, we will. Well, I can't see him just coming in. I mean,
we'll
it seems
see
like. And by the way, like, fun and smart for the show. Like, why not?
And
reach
this is
more
the
people?
First season that they're really bringing on people like
and
that.
And you know who else is coming?
I do, but I want you to tell us.
Oh, get ready, Marissa. Here we go.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler
Dave
alert.
Navarro.
Super excited
Dave
about
Navarro.
Dave Navarro.
Wow.
He's perfect for the show anyway. I mean, Dave Navarro's perfect.
Yeah, the aesthetic, he looks like he's supposed
he
to be
he
on
He aesthetically
Sons of
is looks perfect, but because I see him now as more of a reality star with Inc. and the other show he did.
Leave us reality stars alone.
Huh? Yeah,
we
no, but you know
more.
I love you. You're my own lady.
We can do more.
But with him, again, yeah, but it's, you know what? You were like one and done with that season.
Right.
I'm good. I buy you and everything else. But with him, like, I know him so much
right.
as a personality.
So it's going to be like, oh, Dave Navarro.
It'll be the same thing.
You?
So,
well, that's how I felt about Ashley Tisdale.
You know what? Because I like to, dabble behind the camera as well. So when I stunt cast, I'm going to have them just stand still for 10 seconds before they say anything.
Actually, you know what? It's actually like a good idea.
So that everybody can say, hey, that's Joe McCann.
Or what they do with Ashley Tisdale is they actually worked her in so slowly.
So it was a slow build.
It was like a one episode or two episodes before we really got to know her a little bit.
I still didn't buy her. I bought Joel McHale more than Ashley Tisdale. And that's not just a girl hate thing, because I like Ashley Tisdale.
I thought Ashley
You didn't
was,
believe her on the back
I thought
of the
Ashley
bike?
Was fine.
No. And I didn't believe that she would burn her ankle and it would cause Jax to
All right,
go down.
Stop. Here
riding.
We go. Now we're getting off the subject. So finally, so listen, the one thing I was excited for tonight is I knew the sergeant was going to get killed as soon as I saw the opening. Okay, we're going to wrap that shit up. I love the way that went down.
It went down, and we knew it was coming. Like, they had to get that retaliation. Jack said it. The fact that Pope set that up as good faith, it was amazing to me. Like, that just showed a lot to me about the rest of the season.
But it was just so manipulative. It is so 48 laws of power. Like, the way Pope conducts,
he's
like
awesome.
The puppet master. Like, what he's doing with my character and the Mayans. I don't know what he has over them that would bring...
He's so smart, though.
Yeah, he's just so smart.
We've never gone against anyone like him from Jackson. No. I love, like, Clay. He's so...
Now all of a sudden, Clay wants out of drugs.
No, but by the way, Clay is so past his prime as a leader. He's like, we've gone against guys like this before. He says tonight, like, no, you have never dealt with a Pope before.
And Harold Perrineau, what he's done with the character has been so amazing. Because for me as an actor, I get scripts and I read them and I put a voice to everything the other characters are doing. And watching his take on it has been so interesting because there were so many different ways he could have played this. I'm the toughest guy to ever come. But he just plays it all so subtle and understated and it's contained, but you could still sense the ferocity in there.
And I love the villains that have this like kind of charm to them.
Yeah.
Like he seems so eloquent.
You
want to
like him.
And charming.
There's a magnetism there that
he's
playing.
I'm now liking him. I'm like, let's do business with this guy.
Yeah,
let's make some money.
That's the dangerous magnetism.
Yeah.
It's like the Godfather. He's like, come on, let me.
And why is it? I think it's just, again, from being back east and growing up with a lot of those guys, I might be programmed that way. But I'm like, okay, what do you need me to do?
Yeah, you
Where
like
we bury
it.
The body.
You do.
You like it.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's also like a man's man kind of thing.
He is. And he's rooting for our boy.
Without giving away anything, Do you get to work with him anymore?
Yes.
If this is great. All right, that's really cool to know.
I mean, maybe. Spoiler sound.
No. Chris is too busy nagging us about time. So I loved the snow globe and the music playing. By the way, great job to the director tonight.
Very eerie.
Them all walking around.
You'll never hear that song the same way again.
Just sharks swarming. And I love Tig, how he just – it was the – by the way, I felt tonight was – the old Tig I remember from the first two or three seasons.
Yep,
he's gotten so soft in the last few years and just...
Let the man emote.
Yeah, I know. No. By the way, we
did get a little soft.
He has been soft, but we love Tig, and we've been nervous he's going to get killed off. So we're grateful he's spared. But I love seeing the old Tig. Just out comes a gun, bang, blows the wife's head off.
Just business as usual.
Yeah, and he goes, yeah, but it felt good. You know, it felt good to do that for Open. And they pound this guy's skull, and it was nice. It was a lot of fun. But going to the Pope deal... that he makes with Jax. I think you kind of have to take the deal. And he's offered 2%. Like, it's a sweet deal.
It is a sweet deal. What I like about the deal and what I like about Pope and his character is that it's almost like Pope sees himself in Jax.
Absolutely.
And he sees a lot of potential in Jax. And he's said so many things to Jax about him being a leader and being a man and taking the step up. And tonight saying loyalty has contingencies and it's got to be within your own group with the whole break-ins. And to me, to see Pope see himself in someone else makes me believe that whatever deals they have are going to have the best intentions at this point.
See, there has to be a caveat. There has to be a caveat there, but Jax is becoming kind of enamored with this whole thing that you're saying that he likes him and he admires him.
Could the caveat? Okay, but could the caveat be that it's just simply good business?
No. Never.
I mean, he's going to profit off the Suns. It's not just a matter of like, I can do business with this guy and make a lot of money with him. It can't just end at that.
There's always an ulterior motive.
It can't, are you
like
sure?
There's no altruism there.
There's no altruism, but it's like, you know what? Like, you're, I can do business with you, can do business with me, we can make money together.
I think there's definitely ulterior motive, and I don't think that Jack's looking at it that way right now because he's seeing someone that believes in his leadership and his
Pope,
qualities.
And Pope,
and he needs that now.
He needs
his
it
confidence
now.
He is very shaken.
He does.
That's true.
And by the way, Pope is basically leading him to the conclusion that someone within your club is doing this. He's not outright saying it, but he's leading him there. Because Pope
like
knows.
He knows. Yeah, he knows exactly who
he knows something's up. And he's like, so he's giving him good advice. But I personally think that Jax is still going to, for Opie, is still going to, at the end of all this, is going to kill Pope. I think he hasn't forgotten it. I feel like it's in the back of his head.
Now that he knows that there's a $5 million reward on his head, I don't know if he'll think.
And by the way, you know, Pope lays that out there.
Very conveniently. Like,
right.
Yeah, by the way,
stupid.
If I die.
Just so you
by
know.
The way.
Just
yeah.
so you know. And at $5 million, that means that whole faction of the club gets wiped out. It's not just Jax.
Does.
Everyone's going to go.
Everyone will go.
Jax and the sheriff, we see the sheriff out of uniform, 10-day leave.
Wife's not made
Wife up. Is dead. We see Unser kind of stepping up to help him. And them kind of having a cool exchange, and we see him actually try to take on the Sons, and it seems like his relationship with Jax just took a step backwards. Like, they were kind of making some headway, like they could work together.
Yeah, not so much after this.
So
it was rough to see that. Unser telling Clay his theory. As I sat and I watched it, I was like, why is he doing this? He's so stupid.
Oh, yeah, we were like, don't.
But now that I think about it and have watched the rest of the entire episode, Unser did it on purpose because Unser knows it's Clay. Unser knows that Clay's behind it. He knows that Pope's too smart. He knows.
So why tell him? Why, if you're Unser, why are you telling Clay?
Because everyone thinks that Clay is still so weak. Because no one believes.
So Unser thinks he's weak?
I do. I think that Unser believes the same things that everyone else in the club does. That he still needs his oxygen, that he's weak and he's not rebuilding and that he can't hang. And I think that's why Unser did it. Because he needed to let him know that he's on to him.
I'm going to have to agree this time.
Yep. Okay.
I'm going to have to agree.
And I just have, because you know I like to be right. I get really excited when I'm right.
I was right, but I told you Clay was coming back, baby.
But I told you it was
you
all
called
fake.
That? Yeah. You called it?
Like, I was so excited.
I was like, there's no way. I was like, the breathing thing, it's all a fraud. It's all a fake. He's not hurt.
So you're saying Ron Perlman didn't convince you as an actor? Is that what you're saying?
No, he totally convinced me.
No, he did.
We knew that.
Well, when he couldn't pick up the bike and he was alone.
Right.
Because what do they say? Characters revealed is what you do alone when no one's watching.
Right.
Yeah, because it was real at a point.
Yes.
It was real at a point.
At a point.
But when we see him pumping iron that one scene, you know, it was like, oh, wait a second.
And then he took the oxygen off to go talk to the, I was going to say the CIA, but I guess they're not really the CIA. Well, they are really the CIA. But when he went to go talk to
the
Irish, he took the oxygen off. And I was like, it's all a facade. Like, he wants everyone in the club and everyone around him to believe that he's weak, he's hurt, and he can't do this.
Very Machiavellian.
He's going to come back and he's going to take them all out.
Well, we see, we see that, before we even talk about his comeback, let's talk about the fact that at the vote, you know, he's subtly doing everything to undermine. And I wasn't looking at his body language. He wasn't turned to the side, was he? He was facing front.
No, he was head on.
Head on.
Yeah.
So we're seeing, we've been noticing Ron, as it seems, I don't know if it's the actor's choice or the director, he's kind of turned to the side at the table since he's been injured. But tonight he was
head on.
He was head on. And 6-5, close vote.
Very close.
But and all is like,
those freaking nomads. I hate seeing the nomads at the table. I hate the nomads at the table.
Chrissy hates the nomads.
I don't believe that they should be able to have a vote this early on in the game. Like, I understand that they got voted in. They're helping because they need numbers, but they shouldn't be able to vote. They're too new. And you can't trust another club yet.
Yeah, that,
I mean, I'm just thinking like a biker. I'm not thinking like a host.
I love it.
But Chuck Zito can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Let Chuck do whatever he wants.
I'm reading his book right now as we speak. It's very interesting. He's a man.
The nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Chuck Zito is so nice. Like, because you hear all the stories, of course, and you meet him, and you're like, and he comes over. He's like, hey, man, I just want to make sure I introduce myself to you, Chucky. And I smile. He just embraces
nice.
You. He's a great, great guy. So nice.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that to be very different of what we see in Sons of Anarchy is that he didn't become the president of his motorcycle club because he was hated. He became the president of his motorcycle club because he was the right person for the job, and he is a nice guy. And he does make the right decisions on time. But I've heard that he's amazing. And his book, the stories in his book are they're mind blowing.
I have to get his book because him as a person, but also in his eyes, because I grew up in a very intense environment. I grew up in South Central. So I grew up around people that had, you know, very tainted checkered past. And some of those guys have the biggest smiles and the warmest hearts.
Right.
Very but true. In their eyes, there lied the truth all the time. So even with Chuck, as nice as he is, you can look in his eyes and you can see it. There's like, oh, this is a real guy.
He's lived a life.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, some of the older guys I find, you know, I go back to my days, right, being back east and being around those people. And when they're younger, they, by being ass kickers and thugs, that's how they have the power. And then when they get older, they get a little older and say younger guys can kind of kick their ass or, you know, then they now become more charming and generous. But it's all the quest for power. And I'm not saying that. I don't know Chuck personally, but I've heard the opposite. I've heard other stories about what he's like to work with. And but it's nice to hear this. And I just, you know, you wonder, I also see sometimes when people have reputations in our business, they kind of go they realize they have to make an effort to go the other way.
Right. You have to play to against it.
Especially with a young actor and say, hey, welcome to set or whatever. So, I mean, either way, he's legit. You know, you know, Howard Stern, his name came up
and
in a private conversation with Howard, and he was like, he just laughed. He goes, he's a thug. Yeah. he's a thug.
Well, do it for a long time. Marissa's about to pull our plug.
She's about to kill us.
Now made everyone at AfterBuzz late, so we love you all the other shows.
All right, well, that's okay. Your fault. So by the way, so now we see Clay's back. We know the Nomads were working for Clay.
Yes.
And...
finally, they reveal that.
Right? So, Marissa, we're actually going to go to predictions right now. We're not going to be able to do news and gossip.
That's okay. I didn't have any because I knew the boys were coming.
We had the boys.
The boys were here. We didn't need any news.
Predictions. What, guys?
I mean, there's so much to predict that I just hope that everyone in the Suns lives through next week.
Wow, because why you think somebody is going to die?
I feel like somebody has to
die. I think a Nomad's going next week.
I'll happily take a Nomad.
Right?
Happily.
All right. Get them out of here.
And Mo, we can't ask you to predict because you know what's going on.
I predict a lot of smiles, hugs, and kisses on the
love
upcoming
that.
Shows.
Rainbows and butterflies.
Rainbows, butterflies.
So Marissa, as you take us out of here, I'm going to ask, Mo, what else do you have going on? Your websites, Twitter feeds, what?
Tweet.
Twitter, The Real Mo McCray. I'm on Facebook. I'm just in the streets riding my bike around.
Mo McCray, what do you ride?
Right now I'm on a street bob, Harley Davidson.
Oh, you're Harley too.
Yeah,
no Harley rice burner.
I'm
loving it.
All American, keep it Harley Davidson.
I love it.
Street Bob.
Mo, it was such an incredible pleasure to have you here. And anytime you want to come back and watch with us, it'd just be a pleasure where we have more time to actually, like, I would have loved to have broken down this episode more thoroughly with you.
No, the pleasure was mine.
So please come back.
Thank
come
you
back
guys.
And
thank
again,
you.
Anytime you want, that door is always open.
Yes.
And Chrisley, where do we find you?
Twitter at Chrisley.
At Chrisley, that's
at
it.
At Chrisley. I like it short and simple. Then I can talk more.
Yeah, but how do you spell it?
KRISILY.
I was going to double S you. I was definitely going to double S you.
Super sweet.
Okay, but that's why we have to say it that way, because I always thought it's the double S too. No,
and did you notice how she sung it? Like, I just said The Real Mo McCray, but she's like, at Chrisley.
Got it.
You have to do it. It has to have a melody.
Wow. Okay, so please, you guys, go to iTunes, rate and comment on us, or go to YouTube and rate and comment. But go
and thank you for all the good comments. We love your support and we love bringing you the show.
Yeah, next week, baby.
That's right. Thank
From
you, Marissa.
Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.